Once I was there, but now I'm not.
All right, we finally made it online. That's I'm over it, and I'm over it. Anyway, hello, I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Had a little trouble with our code here, and Channel A not working, so we switched over to Channel B. And this is our once-a-week live show. I'd like to remind you that the North Shore Sports Writers podcast will drop tomorrow around 8 o'clock with all of the Salem News sports writers and Bill Newell hosting, along with Gloucester sports editor Nick Kukuru as well. So it's great to be here. Had last week off because of the holiday, went skiing. And, Tim, it was the wind chill was 27 below on Saturday last week.
Oh, you must have been in your element, Rick, because the only time that you like the cold is when you have boards strapped to your feet.
Well, this is true. That's 100% true. And I'm also dressed like an Apollo astronaut, you know? So, yeah, it was amazing. The only down note of the weekend last weekend was my battery went dead when we were trying to come home in the middle of... Yeah. So it took a little cajoling. AAA was fantastic. The people up there in North Conway that AAA uses were fantastic, and we were able to make it okay. So it was a great weekend. Talk about a great weekend, Tim. Oh, by the way, our special guest tonight will be Ty Hanrahan. Ty Hanrahan is the he's a student coach, hockey coach at Endicott College, and Endicott is ranked in the nation. I think it's Division III. I believe they're ranked number 12. We're going to talk with Ty about his role there, his job, and how the Gulls are doing, and who their competition is, and so on. And then later on, we'll have Gary Larrabee. Will update us on the weekend's golfing activity and catch us up for the last week or so. And then Mike Grenier is going to talk about the perennial 500 Boston Celtics. So we'll do all of that. But first, talk about a great weekend, Tim. I don't know if you watched the games. I watched all four games yesterday, over the weekend, NFL playoffs. I've never seen such great football like that.
Well, I sent a message to my brother, Rick, saying that this is, you know, the Kansas City-Buffalo game will probably get out as the greatest divisional playoff game ever. I mean, it was intense. When you get that many scores in such a short time period in the fourth quarter, with the game on the line, they couldn't stop each other, and unfortunately, time ran out on Buffalo.
Yeah, and it brought up the sudden death playoff rule in playoffs as well. And I heard a lot of discussion about that. And I think they're going to review that and take a look at it, see if they can make it a little bit more exciting for the fans, because it isn't quite equitable. You know, in college, you get the ball, at the 20-yard line or something like that? And each team gets a chance to score.
Yeah, the big thing there is each team gets an opportunity.
Right.
I'm sure Andy Reid wasn't complaining about the format yesterday.
Right. Yep. It works out well for Kansas City. The other games, Tim, were equally, maybe not quite that par at final finish, but pretty close. They were some terrific football over the weekend, all the way across the board.
Yeah, but every game was won on the last play of the game.
And every game was won by one score.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I mean, were they really well played? Well, they were close. They were, for the fans of those particular teams, they were nail biters.
Mm-hmm.
And, three out of four of the visiting teams won. And it was almost a clean sweep, except there were 13 seconds that Buffalo gave to Kansas City.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And as you say, I don't know if they were all great, well-played games. That's not my point. My point is, for a fan to watch, man, they were really exciting. And I'm not even, I'm not a fan of any of those guys, but terrific. And what can you say, Tim? I watch Mahomes, and he throws these sidearm bullets 30 yards downfield, complete, and it's amazing. And he throws it like a jump pass, like a shortstop. Only it's it's unbelievable.
Yeah, his background is in baseball. He could be playing professional baseball right now. I believe he was college shortstop.
Yeah.
And that sidearm throw that he made yesterday had people's heads spinning. That basically is a double play ball coming over the bag from shortstop and slinging it sidearm to put the runner down on the ground and throwing to first base. I saw him. I said, is that the shortstop throw? And that's what he's done. He's used to throwing from different angles. He's used to jumping up and making throws. So all of those things are instinctive baseball moves that he just adapts into a football offense.
Well, and that's not easy because that, you know, a spheroid versus a sphere, it just ain't the same. It ain't the same motion with your arm. It ain't the same coming out of your hand. And I'm just in awe that guy's unbelievable. And that was Brady-esque yesterday. It really was.
Oh, well, on both sides.
Yep.
You have to look at Buffalo and you go, how do you not feel bad for
them? Yep.
Even though, yeah, we hate their guts. It's like, oh my God, you know, talk about sticking plays, play after play. And they just, it was like two heavyweights standing in the middle of the ring going,
yep.
Okay, my turn to throw a punch. And you throw a punch and you knock the guy down and you wait 5 minutes, he gets up and he comes and punches you in the face and knocks you down.
Incredible. Well, turning to high school for 1 second there, Coach, the Prep, St. John's Prep, wins another one in hockey this afternoon. They beat Andover 5-zip, 5-0, and the Eagles are now 10-1 in Division I, and they absolutely smucked Catholic Memorial over the weekend.
That was a huge score, and, you know, it's later in the season, and the Prep is getting it going, heading towards the state playoffs.
As usual. How about Beverly basketball, Tim? Have you kept up with that at all, Beverly boys?
In the paper, yes.
They're averaging about 80 points a game. Several times they've scored in the 90s. They're 11-0. They blasted Tech Boston Academy 80-68 over the weekend, and these are tough teams. Their out-of-league schedule is tough.
Before, they beat Lowell, which is a perennial,
yep.
You know, Merrimack Valley state title contender.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they're doing great. Gloucester's on the rebound in hockey. They're doing okay. Marblehead has a pretty good winning streak going on in hockey. It is we're coming down the stretch. I mean, we're just at the halfway point already. And thank goodness I probably shouldn't say anything, but anyway, I'll leave it at that. There have been very few postponements, and they're just kind of moving along. So it's all good. Anything else, Tim, before we take a look at Endicott hockey?
So all quiet on the baseball front, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. You know, no sense, you know, depressing ourselves before we need to. The Celtics, you just can't watch them. You just can't. You know, imagine if they had won every game in which they had a lead in the fourth quarter.
No, I can't even imagine that. They haven't.
No, It'd be scary, their record.
Yeah.
Now, you know, because of the way they play, they're just scary.
Yeah. Okay, well done. All right, Coach, we're going to take our break here. We are on Channel B, but it's working, and that's up there on all you have to do is just click on the arrow there. I don't know why Channel A is not working. It's beginning to bother me because I was talking with support all last week, but that's neither here nor there. Let's get back to sports. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with Ty Hanrahan, who is one of the coaches. He's a student coach at Endicott College and coaching hockey. So we'll be back with Ty, and he's got Gloucester ties, does Ty. So we'll be back in just a few minutes. Stay with us.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back live, and we're happy to be joined now by Ty Hanrahan, who is a student hockey coach at Endicott College, an athlete himself, primarily lacrosse, and with a lot of ties to the North Shore, in particular to Gloucester. Ty, welcome back. How you doing?
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. How are you?
Okay, we're doing good. I got to tell you, I did go to. We're not going to talk pro sports here, but I did go to Philadelphia the weekend before Thanksgiving, and I went down with my daughter's future in-laws and my wife, and of course my daughter and her fiance went to the game hosted by the vice president of the Flyers, who shall be nameless at the moment, but his initials are Barry Hanrahan. And it's quite an experience in that place, man. I don't know if it's like that in all the arenas. Have you been to other arenas, pro arenas?
Yeah, I have. It's they actually just finished a renovation there at the Wells Fargo Center. They've done a great job. I think it was Arena of the Year in 1920. But yeah, they just finished the renovation.
It's unbelievable. But the audio visual stuff, man. I was telling Tim, I don't know if you've been to the Garden to see a Celtics game. There's a lot of distractions on a timeout. When I used to go to the old Boston Garden, and Tim, you can chip in on this, the halftime entertainment was two guys pushing brooms against each other in opposite directions to clear the floor, and John Kiley playing the organ. That was the entertainment all evening long. So it's a little different now.
Oh, very different. I remember being young enough when the Flyers had their organist.
Oh, okay. Tim, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, Rick.
Yep.
Rick, class, I just did. That's the only entertainment that Red Auerbach allowed. He didn't allow cheerleaders or anything else as long as he was living and breathing and puffing on his behalf.
Yeah, well, it wasn't much different with the Bruins either. There was not, there wasn't anything going on. But it's quite a spectacle. And when we were there, it was Star Wars night at the Wells Fargo Center. And oh my God, it was fantastic. And, the involvement of the fans is 18,000 people there. It was just amazing. And one more question about that, Ty. In your childhood, did you get like on family days and stuff like that on the holidays, did you get to skate on the ice?
So they used to have a holiday party every year, right around Christmas time, right when the team was like on a break, had an off day or whatever. And they would, allow us to all skate on the ice, and I always thought that was amazing, but they haven't had that in a few years. I've had friends that have played pickup hockey on that ice, and I'm like, I've never played on that ice. It just seems, I remember, when I was younger when I would be waiting for my dad, the games I would sit in the press box with them, I'd go out and look at the ice and watch them put the indoor lacrosse.
Ah, yeah.
Live on there. I used to just always be just fascinated with whatever it was.
Yeah, those the changeover from an indoor court to ice or vice versa, the skill of those teams is absolutely amazing and how they do it. You know, and it's that's a whole business in itself. Which brings us now, if I could, how are you doing, first of all? This is your senior year, yes?
Yep, senior year.
All right, and tell us again what your major is.
Business management and analytics.
Analytics, okay. So that goes...
Yeah.
That gets into sports, all right. And what's your job with the hockey team at Endicott?
I help our coach run the practices, mm-hmm. And kind of, you know, we piece together what our lineup will look like that weekend, and just any, recently I've been going on the bench with him, kind of just being an extra hand, can see some things maybe he doesn't always see because he's managing the bench, and just stuff like that, but I really enjoyed it. This year's my first year where I feel like I'm a lot more hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are a few years I would just, you know, practice and kind of, I think it was just a little bit, you know, I had to kind of get settled in, and takes me a few years to kind of catch up to the game and stuff like that, study it. Now I know all these guys. And so, yeah, it's a great time.
How do you do, how's this, let me see if I can find the right question here. I'm guessing at this time of year you're starting to go out and look for career opportunities, and you're probably getting, if you don't already have it together, getting a resume together. What does this do on your resume? Because business and analytics and your sports background, your sports history, what are you kind of looking for at the moment?
I honestly think it's terrific because it's under Coach R.J. Tolan, who has a great name in the hockey world just for just the coach he is and the person he is. So just to have that on my resume that I worked under him alone is, I think, very beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And also helping me with the scouting and evaluating players type of side. I was always kind of on the management side, like growing up with my dad and focusing on that, and this is helping me with scouting. You know, sometimes I'll watch games of kids he wants to recruit in certain leagues, and, you know, here's what I look for, here's what, you know, just gives me a lot of pointers, and
cool.
It's kind of broadening my hockey resume, I would say.
Absolutely. Tim, I know you've got some questions lurking back there.
Yeah, I don't get tired of people who name drop your father.
Absolutely.
I don't get tired of it. I do it every chance I can.
I don't get tired of it because I see how hard my dad works.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Push it up to that, and it just motivates me, and my brothers will all say the same. Just to see how hard he works, we just try to follow his footsteps. And whatever it is, just as long as we keep the same work ethic, you know, we'll be fine.
Okay, I'm looking down the roster, and it's amazing how far across the country and north of the border that you guys actually draw from. There are 11 kids from New England. 8 of those kids are from Massachusetts. But you have to answer me, what is the designation after, they're going to be a minor league designation, NCDC?
Yeah, so that's a really good junior hockey league for a lot of guys that go in usually after high school or their 18U season. And
okay.
We have that have played 1 year in there, and we have some guys that have played 2 or even a little bit of 3 seasons in there.
Okay, and the USPHL, I'm taking, is the U.S. Professional Hockey League?
United States Premier Hockey League. So that's another junior league. It's a little less competitive than the NCDC. The NCDC used to, and it still might be a division of the USPHL.
Okay.
So we get a lot of NCDC players, which is, I believe it stands for National College Development Conference or something like that. But yeah, and then it's the NAHL, the North American Hockey League.
Yeah. Okay, now you got, most of your team is associated with one or the other of these programs, so the skill level of player that you're attracting is incredibly high and obviously speaks to the success that the team has had over the last year.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you look at, I think in 2015 was our first year, and we just had real solid classes of really good hockey players, but even better people, and that's how RJ has built this program from literally scratch bottom. And I think the consistencies, I haven't really talked with him on that, but there are a lot of guys that come from the same junior program. I think it's, you kind of know if this kid played at this certain program, you know, they have a really good coach, and you come in, you know what type of player you're getting every single time, and that makes it a little more easier.
Do you travel with the team, Ty, when there are away games?
Yeah, this year we haven't had any big travel trips. You know, I think the furthest we go is around 3 hours, mm-hmm. 2.5.
Okay, well, that cuts into your study time as a senior here. Tell me about the team, because, you know, we get from Sean Medeiros, we get the updates every day from all the sports. And Endicott College, you know, so many kids, Tim and I both taught at Gloucester High School, and so many kids just kind of looked elsewhere besides Endicott and Salem State. And then, you know, you take a look at the accomplishments of Endicott, and you take a look at now the athletic programs, including football and everything else here, and you're attracting people from all over the country. And it's to be ranked number, I think the last time I looked, it was the program was ranked number 12. So
right.
What's the team, let me get the right question here, the level of competition that you guys have had, tell me a little bit about your team, about maybe some of the challenges that they've overcome.
So I think, like, well, first of all, just Endicott as a whole, I think we hosted 3 or 4 conference championship games in the fall alone for
wow.
sports. So that was crazy. It's obviously a standard at Endicott with that when it comes to athletics as of late. And when it comes to our team, we play Salve is always a tough team. They're in our conference. Curry and UNE are usually always ranked with us or near us. So it's always a really tough game, and every game in our conference is hard, I would say, and our guys know that. And we recently had a COVID outbreak, just to show the character of our team. the COVID outbreak where we had 6 or 8 guys out, and certain guys filled in. We had a fourth line that was full of defensemen.
Wow.
And they ended up in both the games producing points, and we ended up winning both those games and finished it off with the third one when we swept Nichols last weekend. But it obviously really helps us stay focused when we have the best goalie in D3 behind our play. So that obviously really helps. So I always believe you're as good as your goalie. And we have the best goalie, so we know that we can be the best.
Yeah, that's what you coaches always say, you know, build from the goal out. Go ahead, Tim.
Did you guys look into the possibility that your defenseman was somehow responsible for this COVID outbreak? All of a sudden, you get to play 5 and score goals?
So they get to go in.
Yeah.
They could have been. It was weird. It was the first time we got tested after everyone went home from our Christmas break. So we had a lot of cases there, but we were able to stay focused and won those 3 games. And then we played Wentworth this past weekend, and we split with them. We lost in overtime the second game.
What's it like with the coaching staff, Ty? Because Coach Tolan looks like he's got a very young staff here. He's got a couple of guys from the class of 19 and plus yourself.
Yeah, that's the thing about RJ is, you know, he enables you and he trusts you, and that, you know, to feel empowered, and that gives me a lot of confidence in myself, because, you know, I really do believe that I know the game very well and just growing up around it. But sometimes, you know, when I would come in as a freshman, it would be like, oh, I don't want to tell these guys that, you know, because they take freshmen, and these guys, some of these guys were 24, 25, and I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, RJ and the other guys just start like, no, like, you got an idea, say, he's very open, door's always open. And yeah, he has two former players with him that are at some games they recruit, and they're there for practices, and so yeah, they're a huge help as well.
What's a lesson you've learned, as you just said, you know, being a hockey brat, a rink rat, really, of the highest order? What's a lesson you've learned as a coach that maybe you weren't expecting? Because you do come in with an expectation, you come in with experience, you're an athlete yourself, and, you know, you know you have a lot to learn, obviously, but what are one or two of the things that you have learned by being on the ice, working with the team, you know, working with the players, and maybe implementing analytics if you do that?
Right. I think the most important thing for me to realize was, you know, just to try to understand why some people think the way they do, like certain players, if it is a different upbringing, different coaching style they came up with, or what their thought process was.
Hmm.
A lot of the time, because I played at a relatively higher level growing up too, it's, you got to factor in emotion in the games too. And when players are making decisions, you can't just be like, why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? I would do this, I would do that. You kind of got to factor that in. But I would say definitely just kind of sitting back for those first few years and kind of absorbing all the different input coming from the different coaches, and having the head coach like RJ really helps, because he really lets everyone contribute if they have an idea, and doesn't shut the door to anyone, whether that's a player, a coach, or whoever.
Tim, you want to finish up with young Mr. Hanrahan?
Well, Tom, you know, it's such an amazing story of Endicott over the past probably 20-25 years, when they decided to enlarge the school, go on this massive building program, became co-ed, extended their athletic program, and just the success that the school itself has achieved. You know, you've got a hockey rink, you know, endorsed by, you know, Ray Bourque, a Bruins a Nets League Hall of Famer, and you've brought such great acclaim to the North Shore, to the city of Beverly itself. It's going to feel great to be a part of that tradition, and you guys have established it in relatively short term across both the academic and the athletic spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we all are kind of thinking in the back of our mind here, is like how much Endicott has grown, not only in the last 20 years, but from when I was a freshman, with the buildings going up, the expansion, the athletics just improving every single year, and just producing really, really well students. And I think it all starts with the vision that, fortunately he passed away before I was there, but Doc Wiley, I remember hearing everything about what his vision was, what his goals were for Endicott. And he drove that transition. And I mean, to this day, President DeSalvo at our school has done a really good job navigating through last year and staying focused. You know, nothing slowed down with their, with any process of them trying to just continue to grow. And our athletic director, Mr. Wiley, provides us with anything we need, like literally anything we need. So they make it very easy for us students to grow and really adapt.
Dr. Wiley was a colleague of ours when I was teaching, and then he went over to Endicott, and I got to interview him several times for this website. And every time I did, I wish you had known him. He was such a gentle soul, and a lot of great humor, and he just had a vision, like you just pointed out, and Tim did, that continues to this day. And I'm not sure a lot of people understand the gem of a jewel we have at Endicott College among all of our schools here in the Northeast, but it's a great story. And Ty, thank you so much, man, for taking the time with us. I'm going to check in with you. Now, what do the playoffs look like? Well, when will they be?
The playoffs are usually the last weekend of February, mm-hmm, or the first week of March. Like, the first weekend of March is usually the championship for the CCC. So hopefully we get there again, and if we play the way I know we can, we definitely will. And
okay.
Yeah.
So maybe we can catch up with you then, and you can talk about some a little bit more in depth about how the team performs and who's doing what.
Absolutely. I'd love that.
Cool. Well, say hi to you folks for us, and be well.
You got it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ty. Take care.
Thanks, Ty.
All right. That's Ty Hanrahan, who is the student coach. He is an assistant coach at Endicott College men's hockey. He is a student finishing up his senior year. And Tim, no surprise, but some of the things he said I've never heard from coaches before. And the one that stands out, first of all, talking about his dad's work ethic. You and I are familiar with that, as is everybody who knows Barry from Gloucester. But the thing that I hadn't heard this before, Coach, and I know that you probably have experienced it, is how to relate to where each player is coming from and why they do what they do. I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah. He's such a well-spoken young guy. And, boy, you know the future of sports is, you know, one of his majors after business management is analytics.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's driving sports today. Oh. He stopped me in my steps on that one.
Well, he's also an athlete himself. He was a Division I lacrosse player, played hockey in high school and so on. So, you know, he's got that background, and he had a really messed up knee that I think he's recovered from now, but it still kind of put a kink in on-ice activities or on-the-field activities. Anyway, great talking with Ty, and he's got his father's voice characteristics, too. He sounds a lot like Barry. That was very special. I appreciate that. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll check in with Gary Larrabee, who's going to update us here in the world of golf. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And, of course, don't forget, tomorrow at around 8 a.m., Bill Newell will be hosting the Salem News Sports Writers podcast here on MSONewsSports.com.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, we're back now with Gary Larrabee, Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore, and haven't talked in a couple of weeks. Gary's been very patient. Gary has this staff of amazing researchers and guys who go out there and get all this information, including himself. And, Gary, I can't wait to hear what's on the schedule tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, because the more you think about golf or talk about golf in the middle of these horrible winters, the warmer you will feel, I guarantee it.
Well, I was just telling Tim we were skiing last weekend, and it was minus 27 wind chill factor on Saturday. So, okay, you guys have to have your golf talk, so go ahead.
Well, I think it was pretty cute, Tim, the way Hudson Swafford, I love that name, Hudson Swafford, won his second American Express tournament on the PGA Tour yesterday out in California, out in Palm Springs in that neighborhood, shooting a closing 8-under-64. He beat some unknown by the name of Tom Hogue, H-O-G-E, by 2 shots in La Quinta. So obviously a very good day for Hudson Swafford, and he's won this tournament twice in the last 5 years, which is nothing too shabby. And it's just another reminder of some of these guys we don't even know about are winning more than one tournament.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it this afternoon, trying to get some thoughts together, because I didn't watch any golf over the weekend with all the football that was going on.
I mean, those boring football games?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, all you had to do was turn in for the last 5 minutes, and you'd see the whole thing.
Just like they say about NBA basketball.
Right, right.
Yeah, you know, you only needed to watch 20 minutes of football over the weekend, and you'd have seen the most critical parts of every game.
What a weekend. What a weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, it really was. It was tremendous. Finally, a playoff weekend lived up to playoff football, as you would expect it. But, you know, I was thinking, once the regular tour finishes, you know, late in the year, and they start going around and playing all these, you know, who's who of tournaments, and you look at the lineups, and it's a veritable who are they of golfers. I think they ought to dedicate that time in between and have, but all these guys, all these young guys that haven't really won anything, go out there and play these tournaments, and it's just for them. You know, to give them a really good chance. Because, you know, looking down the leaderboard of yesterday, Siwoo Kim is the first name you really know. Because other than that, I'm going, that Johnson tied for 14th. There's not a whole lot of familiar people. So take all the guys who've got their cards, throw them out, and put all these young guys out.
Well, that's what they have those fall tournaments for, Tim, after mid-September. They do have a bunch of tournaments in October and November, which are pretty much for the lesser knowns out there. But, hey, it's still a bounty of riches for all these guys who get to play out there. And another good week for Hudson Swafford, his third tour victory, by the way. He's no spring chicken either, Tim. He's 34 years old.
Wow.
But a nice player, to say the least. Good for him.
Yeah, doing a late eagle to cement the win. That's holding up to the pressure.
It certainly is. Chris, if you remember what happened last week, you didn't get a chance to talk about last week's tournament, the Sony Open out in Hawaii, but that tournament and the outcome just reminded us that Japan's Hideki Matsuyama is not a flash in the pan after he won last year's Masters. He goes out and wins last week's tournament in a playoff over the fellow who had been leading for the whole tournament, Russell Henley, who had won that tournament before. And if you remember what happened sudden-death playoff, and if you saw what happened to him on that very first playoff hole, Matsuyama stroked a 276-yard three metal within 3 feet of the cup to win the playoff rather quickly. But another reminder, we got a lot of good players everywhere in the world.
You know, you leave the whole weekend, you get to the first playoff, and the guy hits it within 3 feet. That's just a sinking feeling.
It is. It certainly is. But they both made a lot of money last week, so I don't feel sorry for either of them. But Hideki Matsuyama is always going to be a force during this current season, 2022, and I think he'll have his game in very good shape when he defends the Masters in April. We should also mention yesterday that Miguel Angel Jimenez, one of the real nasty guys on the Champions Tour, a real grumpy guy, He smokes his cigars, and he puts on a great show, stretching and limbering up on the practice tee. But he still has some games. So we won the Champions Tour opening event yesterday down in Florida. And, of course, we should mention Danielle Kang, who ran off 5 birdies in a 7-hole stretch to overtake Nelly Korda to win the LPGA event in Orlando. And lastly, we should mention that Thomas Peters, you know where he's from, don't you, Tim?
Belgium.
There you go. You're on top of it. He won his 6th and biggest European Tour title at the Abu Dhabi Championship over there in the world of the desert, I guess, out there. They do have some golf courses, and they play for big money. And that was a win for Thomas Peters. But one local angle guy we have to talk about, as well as we have 2 players, you know, playing on the Korn Ferry Tour right now, and they had their kickoff event early last week, a little bit of a different type of schedule from Sunday to Wednesday. And Evan Harmeling from Andover finished tied for 28th, and Rob Oppenheim, who's off the main tour and trying to fight to get his tour card back on the Korn Ferry Tour, finished a tie for 51st place. Not very good. Rob shot plus 2. Harmeling shot 3-under. It took 14 under to win. By a very unique guy. I don't know where he's from. He might be from India. His name is Ashkay Bhatia. Bhatia, B-H-A-T-I-A. So, all kinds of people from all over the world winning big tour events the last couple weeks, and we're still in California this coming week on the PGA Tour. We'll see what happens this coming weekend, guys.
Okay, Gary, a golf course question. With this really bitter cold that we've had over the last several weeks, what impact does that have on the courses, fairways, and the greens?
Well, I think that the turf can handle the freeze because those golf courses are prepared in the fall to handle the freeze. What they are not prepared to handle, although the private clubs who can spend a lot of dough, they put their greens, they put covers on their greens to protect them. But the issue is when you have snow, sleet, freezing rain, and the moisture freezes into the root structure of the turf, whether it's tees, fairways, or greens, and that can cause winter kill based on how long it lasts. But so far this winter, it's been a very good winter for the golf courses from my discussions with Bill Rocco, the course superintendent over at Salem. And they're hoping they're keeping their fingers crossed that the weather is good for the turf for the next couple of months.
Gary, the final item on your agenda talks about the increase in golf participation, and what's that mean?
Yeah, every year the National Golf Foundation, you know, releases statistics from the past year. They can put these numbers together by mid-January, and what they made note of this week in the announcement from the foundation was that play was actually up 2% from last year, which isn't bad, but that means we're talking 600,000 additional golfers in 2021, which was not unlike what happened in 2020, guys, because of the pandemic. It's getting more people. The golf is one of the great things you can do out in the sunshine and fresh air and dealing with the COVID. And the numbers are still very good. And, of course, all the golf courses around here, public and private, their numbers were up last year. So no surprise that that is reflected in these numbers that the National Golf Foundation make note of. Mm. They had 37.5 million people involved with golf this past year, and means that golf is still very much a major warm weather activity here in the good old U.S. of A.
Yeah, and as you say, great to get out there during this these crazy times health-wise. So that's super. Gary, all right, so what's up now? Where are we going next week?
Let's see what happens at the tour events this week. And just looking forward to another week of counting down to spring and to April and the Masters and golf and all that good stuff.
All right. Thank you so much, Gary. Great stuff. Really appreciate it.
Hugs and kisses to you all.
Right back at you. Take care, Gary.
See you, Gary.
All right, that's Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer here. Takes the time for us every week on Monday nights to bring us up to speed, and ain't nothing he don't know about golf. All right, we're going to talk.
I just saw that Joe Ukeka, the former head coach.
Yeah,
And Dartmouth passed away.
Yeah, I saw that earlier. Yep, a legend, another legend. My goodness. Okay, so let's take a break here, Tim, and we'll come back with Mike Grenier. And I got to get both these spots in, so let's do this. You're listening to MSO News Sports at MSONewsSports.com. This is North Shore Sports Night.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, happy now to have Mike Grenier back with us, another sports historian and sports writer. And Mike, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, good. Rick, how we're doing? Of course, I'm hearing Gary Larry, my good friend, for so long, and of course, he's talking golf and Pebble Beach, and I just can't relate. I mean, you know, I can relate to going to Salisbury Beach and having a slice of pizza at Tripoli's.
There you go.
But other than that, I was so glad when we were both at the Salem News that he would take on the full baggage of the golf, and I would be sent to Fenway Park, for example, to watch Roger Clemens pitch. So I liked that trade-off.
It worked well, yes. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of Salisbury Beach, I talked with Salisbury Police Chief Tom Fowler the other day. We have an interview up there from Friday. And that the fire that destroyed so much stuff up there at Salisbury Beach really was an extremely dangerous fire. And you got to applaud the heroics, as Chief Fowler put it, of all the first responders. And his guys, the policemen, were going from door to door, rescuing people, knocking on doors. And thank God, I mean, amazingly, nobody got hurt. So
yeah, that was a windswept fire. And, when I saw the initial images, it looked as bad as you were just describing it.
Goodness.
Or worse. I mean, it was just horrible.
Yeah.
And that's been a long time. You know, for teenagers, when you and I would, that was a hangout for us as teenagers and college kids going to Salisbury Beach. And yeah, there were a lot of, I guess there was a lot of seasonal residences were affected by that latest fire.
Yeah. All right. But by the way, lesson learned. I've got a wood chip in my eye. I was chopping firewood today and didn't have glasses on. So if you guys ever do stuff like that, wear your damn glasses.
Yes.
Ah, what an idiot. My eye is. Anyway.
Safety glasses for sure.
Before I turn it over to Tim here, because I know he's just sitting there waiting with questions and comments, a non-Celtics related question, because here we are once again talking about the 500 Celtics.
Yes.
John Stockton, did you see that story?
Oh, yeah. Stockton has been unvaccinated for a while. Well, he's been unvaccinated, totally, obviously. And he's been kind of a vocal about it. And what, he had his tickets canceled or something?
Yeah, at Gonzaga. Yeah, they revoked his pass. They revoked everything and said, you can't come in here. And it's just
Hall of Fame guy.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you not be intelligent enough to get vaccinated? He's another case, just like Aaron Rodgers and so many others, Kyrie Irving. We're seeing this from prominent great athletes who are currently playing or retired, and it's just a ridiculous situation. Obviously, they're not role models for anybody that needs to be vaccinated.
The thing is, and my last comment before Tim can jump in here, I was going to be broadcasting some games, and then we were told you got to wear a mask to do that, and I can't. It won't work. It just slips down. I can't. My glasses fog up. I can't do my stats and so on.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember, you know, of course I'll wear my mask. These are kids.
Yeah.
Of course I'll wear my mask.
Of course. Of course. And, you know, I really haven't gone to any games lately because of the Omicron variant, obviously because it spreads much, it's more infectious than previous incarnations of the virus. So it's been stay away from games until the situation gets better.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, I'm looking to go to the Celtics versus Memphis in about a month because, Scoonie Penn is an assistant coach, and Scoonie, of course, played at Salem High School and, is making his way up the ranks, the coaching ranks in the NBA, a young assistant coach, and they've done a phenomenal job. And maybe that's where Tim and I can start, because you take a team like Memphis, and Tim, can we name four players for the Memphis Grizzlies, and yet they're 15 games over 500, and the Boston Celtics, who have some big name players, are exactly at 500, as Rick often alludes to every Monday.
For 2 years now.
Yeah.
That's the amazing thing. I don't know if it's my age, you know, my disinterest in watching playground basketball, you know, watching the chest thumping, the lack of team play. But I'd be hard pressed to name 20 guys in the NBA right now.
Yeah, you know, I want them close.
A lot of people our age, that's not the way we grew up watching the game and enjoying the game. Yeah, the kids today love it because it's off. And the worst thing, Mike, and I'm sure you agree, the worst thing that ever happened to sports was ESPN.
Exactly.
Oh, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
No, exactly. You know, and I look back and I go, yeah, well, the reason, you look at the teams that win the championships, and you look at back when San Antonio was a great discipline, could play half-court basketball, could run you off the court, but they could slow it down and they could kill you with half-court patience.
That's right. And, of course, Greg Popovich was at the head of that whole scheme. And he was still, to this day, a great coach. He doesn't have the players that he used to have, but he's an absolutely great coach, and he has the respect of everybody that's still in the NBA. So, but our beloved Boston Celtics, who got 51 points from Jason Tatum yesterday, and people went crazy. The bottom line is that in their last 60 games, going back to last year, they are in their last 120 games, they are 60-60. That shows you that they're trending to nowhere.
Yeah.
In other words, and also, Rick and Tim, you know, you look at yesterday they won against a really bad Washington Wizards team, and Tatum legitimately had a great game. And I got to say, to his credit, afterwards he said, this is just one game. We have to do a lot more than this. He wasn't bouncing up off the walls and saying, I'm better than LeBron James and all that stuff. So, but the reality is the next three games, they're playing against teams who have combined to be 27 games below 500.
Whoa.
So they can take advantage of this right now because they're playing Sacramento. They're playing the New Orleans Pelicans without Zion Williamson. And if you've seen Zion Williamson, by the way, Rick, and you've made mention of him in the Mountain Dew commercials, he looks like Vince Wilfork.
Oh, jeez.
You know?
Oh, no.
You wonder if he's ever going to come back.
Right.
And you know, but they're playing the Celtics can make some ground up here. But will they? Because they've shown a tendency to lose even to the bad teams. And like I said, these next three games, they're playing the Atlanta Hawks, New Orleans Pelicans, and the Sacramento Kings, who are combined 27 games below 500. So even at that point, if they win those games, are they really legitimately a good team? No, they aren't. They have a long way to go. They have to show that they can beat some of the better teams in the league. And they just haven't done that. They're just... there's so many things you can point out, right, Tim and Rick, of what they do well and what they don't do well, and it fluctuates from game to game. I mean, Tatum and Jaylen Brown are still scoring at a high rate, but the coach, and I'm wondering how much the coach is influencing this record of theirs, because you take a look, and 1 week he'll play Peyton Pritchard, who's a very good shooter, off the bench. He'll play him like 20 minutes a game. The following week, he plays lucky to play 3 minutes per game. Romeo Langford, a first-round draft pick, same thing. Aaron Naismith, who has to really, his confidence has to be shot. He's shooting like 23% on threes, 34% overall. Is he a legit player? Because he, you know, does he play enough to become a legit player, or is he just not a player? But we don't find out because the coach of the Boston Celtics doesn't play him consistent minutes. So it remains a mystery as to whether these young guys can come off the bench and spell the Jason Tatum's and give them some meaningful minutes off the bench. You know, then you have Enes Kanter, Freedom, Black Lives Matter, Tibetan Lives Matter. Enes Freedom, he's changed his name, of course. He's probably one of the worst defensive players in basketball, but he trots him out there at times, and at other times he won't play for a week or two. So I just don't get it. I can't comprehend what the head coach is doing, because it just changes from game to game and week to week.
All right, Mike, I thought about this today, and I wanted to get your take on it.
Yeah.
Where does the responsibility of the Celtics management lie?
Yeah.
In this team?
Well, I mean, you know, Brad Stevens obviously has taken on the Danny Ainge role, and this is his first year doing it. And, you know, it's his first year, the roster building, you know, it's safe to say has not been good because of some of the things we just cited. The starters, I mean, you're talking about the starters having to play heavy minutes because the rookie coach doesn't trust the bench. So, obviously, he's a Brad Stevens hire, so you have to question that. They're treading uncertain waters because this head coach has no experience, and so far he's just a 500 coach. But Brad Stevens built this roster, and it reached a point a week ago where a guy who hasn't played all year, Juancho Hernan Gomez, who was averaging 1.1 points per game, was traded for two players who have no chance of playing this year because they're injured and out for the year.
Yeah, I saw that.
And obviously, it was a salary cap move, right, Rick? And
yeah.
They did it to clear some salary so they wouldn't go into the so-called luxury tax. They don't have to pay a luxury tax, you know, which the league assesses when the salaries are above a certain level. So, but, you know, it just, to me, it illustrates that the roster building left something to be desired because some of the guys that Brad Stevens acquired were unable to break into NBA games and become and contribute even 6 or 8 or 10 minutes of playing time. And that's on Brad Stevens, that part of it.
I think you answered the question that I was going to ask, Mike, and that was about consistency. And I didn't realize the minutes that are being doled out in that manner. I didn't know that, because one thing you notice when the Celtics play like the Celtics, and by that I'm talking about the Celtics blueprint, you know, they win. And it's a 48-minute game. They play all the time, both ways.
Right.
But they don't do that half the time. And I didn't realize. So consistency to me seems to be a problem. And I don't know about talent. Maybe you could tell me whether or not they have the talent.
Well, they have. I mean, Richardson coming off the bench is a nice talent. You know, they have some parts. I mean, I think that Pritchard, the more he plays, the better he plays. The less he plays, then his confidence is riddled. His confidence is shaken. And then, you know, we don't know whether Langford and Naismith, who were recent number one first-round picks, we don't know whether they can play because they don't play enough. So guys like Al Horford, who's 35 years old, has to play fairly heavy minutes, and he's only shooting 28% on threes, a career low. Jason Tatum is shooting a career lows on both regular field goal percentage and three-point percentage, because he's playing really big minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's, as of a while ago, I know he was second or third in the entire NBA as far as minutes played per game.
Wow.
All right, so that's not a good thing, even though he's 20. He can play 34, 35 minutes, but when you're getting up to that 39, 40-minute range, obviously you get the law of diminishing returns kicks in. And the same thing with Jaylen Brown. He's playing big minutes. You have to have some solid reserves. And, you know, surprisingly, right, Tim, Grant Williams, who, you know, was kind of like a borderline NBA player first couple of years, is having by far his best year. He's shooting almost 50% on threes and like 48-49% overall. So he's given some really meaningful minutes off the bench, but there aren't enough of those guys. he's the only one that's been consistent along with Josh Richardson. So they just they don't have enough bench talent to relieve the starters like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They just don't have it. And Robert Williams, who I love the way he plays, the way he hustles, his quickness, the way he rebounds and blocks shots and goes after loose balls on the floor, much in the way Dave Cowens used to. He's really not afraid to sacrifice his body. But he misses too many games. He's out for a couple of games with this little injury or that injury. And a week or so ago, his significant other gave birth, and he missed a couple of games. And I don't recall Larry Bird and Kevin McHale missing a week's time because their wives had babies. I just don't recall that. And I was around for those teams.
Yeah, you know, they pack the wife up and take her with them on the road if they had to, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you kind of wish that they would settle on five and then maybe a 6, 7, 8 and tell the other guys, maybe we'll get you in at some point, you know, by March.
Right.
Because that's what they used to do. You know,
right.
you have to have an absolute blowout to get off the Celtics bench, or even anybody's bench back
Correct.
In the day.
Yeah.
And you had, you know, basically a starting seven, maybe eight, you go eight deep.
Yep.
And those guys played, and they knew they were going to be coming off the bench, and they
right.
were going to get good minutes. And so they were primed for that. The other guys knew that they were practice ones.
Right. And you're right, Tim. And they need to settle. This is where we're talking about, again, this goes back to the head coach. He's been really inconsistent in terms of giving his bench players time. And, you know, in other words, if you're starting Marcus Smart, then Schroeder comes off the bench. And he's had a really pretty good year overall. If Schroeder starts, then Marcus Smart comes off the bench. Of course, he's been injured lately, Marcus Smart. He just came back yesterday. So, beyond that, he plays Grant Williams, but then, you know, you don't know after that whether Langford's going to play 18 minutes or play 2 minutes, whether Pritchard's going to play 16 minutes or a minute and a half at the end of a game. It's just been so frustrating as a basketball observer, and the Boston fans are very savvy. They really know what's going on,
yeah.
And I can see them wringing their hands and just wondering what is the head coach doing to get the most out of his players. And, you know, at this point, everything is still in a state of flux. They're much closer to, they're in eighth place right now, which would get them barely into the playoff. Eighth place. However, they're only a half a game out of being in 11th place, like, you know, where they would not make the playoffs at all, not even as a play-in team. So they're treading dangerous waters as far as being a relevant team in the Eastern Conference.
All right, Mike, go ahead, Tim, last one.
It's just so hard to see with, you know, two All-Star caliber players at your at your forward positions, and they just can't seem to find the third piece. And
right.
we all know that's okay. It takes the third piece to make the puzzle fit, and then your other guys slide in there. But you
right.
got to have the three. You can't do it with two guys, and especially one of them, and neither of them being the center.
Exactly right. A lot of the really good teams, the ones who are threatening to win the entire league, you know, the NBA title, usually have three outstanding players. You know, we can, Rick, I know we have to cut it off here, but if we're talking about the Bucks or the Nets or Phoenix Suns, they all have three players who are very way above average talents, and that's why they have a shot at winning it all.
All right, Mike, I have a homework assignment for you. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. I think we don't use you your expertise enough for all the things that you have and you've done. And what I would like to do, I'd like to ask you to reminisce and ruminate on a visiting team athlete that you enjoyed interviewing, because I know that you didn't interview just Red Sox and just Celtics.
Right. Oh yes. Right. Exactly. This.
So I want you
over the years is just can name just about anybody in the league.
All right. But
I had a shot at it. You know?
Okay. So we're looking for a good story. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. All right. Mike, stay well and thank you so much.
Hey, Tim. you take care. You guys have a good week, and stay away from people who have not been vaccinated.
There you go.
Exactly.
All right.
Bye, buddy.
Be well, Mike.
Take care.
All right, that's Mike Renier, sports writer. He's also a sports historian. And, Tim, I keep forgetting to ask him about that because he's talked to so many people. And sometimes, you know, you read this stuff in the paper and you think you know what the athlete is like, but then these guys can tell you the story behind the story.
Yeah. You know, and guys like him, you know, they've got the access that casual fans like you and I would never have. You know,
yep.
And we can see these guys, and we can hear some of these stories, but you don't get all the tidbits. So it'll be interesting to see whose story he decides to tell.
Yeah, I want to know who the first one's going to be. I'm excited about that. And don't let me forget to ask him, because I used to do that in math, and the kids would get very upset. But you assigned these last night, aren't you even going to count them? Uh-oh. So, okay. All right, Tim, be well, okay?
All righty, Rick. We'll talk to you sometime during the week.
All right. Thanks, Coach. I appreciate it.
All right, brother.
Bye-bye.
Right.
That is Tim Kearns, our there's the other one, our analyst here at MSO. Are we off? Let me cancel.
No, not yet. Go away.
There we go. All right, there we go. Finally, I find the right key to push here. So anyway, don't forget, tomorrow around 8 o'clock, the North Shore Sports Writers podcast will drop. It's with Phil Stacey, the executive sports writer for the Salem News, along with Matt Williams, the assistant sports editor. I should have said he was the sports editor. Assistant sports editor Matt Williams, and of course Nick Giannis of the Salem News, and Nick Kukru, sports editor of the Gloucester Times. They'll all be chatting with Bill Newell. And, you know, guys, if you haven't listened to this program, you've got to. Talk about knowledgeable. These guys just mentioned so many names that cover so many games. High school, obviously, primarily, have so many statistics and some great stories. So please tune in at some point after the podcast drops tomorrow at around 8 o'clock. That's it for me. That's it for North Shore Sports Night. I want to thank our producer and engineer, Bill Popofsky, of course, Tim Kearns, and Bill Newell. I'm Rick Moore. This is MSONewsSports.com.